Hello there. My name is Michael Brady, and I am part of the group called, the partnership called Partners for Karmic Freedom with Linda Brady. And this is January 15th, 2023, and it is day 166 of the Cancer Project, as we've called it, as I've called it. This is a journey of transparency in the occurrence of cervical cancer in the life of Linda Brady that occurred on July 4th of this past year, 2022, and her journey through treatment, cancer treatment, to cure that cancer, which has been accomplished now through radiation and chemo that came to a close in November, mid-November, toward the end of November. And the aftermath of that, the healing of it, and the rest of the journey for the cancer project, which could take a year for all we know, because we're going to do some follow-up treatment, we think, to it, for it, to try to eradicate the cancer left in her body, the squamous cancer cells left in her body at the stem cell level, which is the very beginning, the origin of creating anything in the body. If that's accomplished, that cancer in particular will not be able to reoccur in her body again. It will be completely gone. So anyway, we're at day 166, January 15th of the Cancer Project, and I'm going to call this one Breakthrough, because it has been a very bumpy, interesting ride since the last podcast of Cancer Project, which was January 2nd. I'll try to catch up with what was going on here. In this ensuing time period, Linda has had an undercurrent of constant, very gradual, very slow improvement in terms of her body finding its way back to normalcy, operating well, her moving out of various forms of discomfort. So part of that journey, she has been going through drug withdrawal. She's actually started the drug withdrawal on January 2nd with oxycodone. And on January 3rd, she stopped taking Ativan, which is a benzodiazepine. And both of these drugs interactively are very addictive. They're both addictive, and both of them combined are, according to the literature I've been reading recently, guaranteed to be addictive. Not to mention that she was on these medications for close to 6 months or 5 months, 5.5 months, and I'm sorry, longer than that, 6 months plus. And that in and of itself guarantees addiction to either one of these drugs or both of them. So she came out of her cancer treatment addicted to these medications. And what happens with I'll talk about the Ativan first, with which is classified primarily as an anti-anxiety medication, but was overtly prescribed to her during the course of her treatment as a third tier of any nausea medication by the prescribing doctors, which were her cancer doctors, and only owned up to the anti-anxiety part along the way as a secondary issue or problem, and only because we brought up the word anxiety. They really didn't ever talk about anxiety up front around it. And they never talked about the complications I just opened up with. So anyway, through December, through mid-December through the holiday into the first. She has been ready. She's been biologically able, capable. She's been cured enough to stop relying on the pain medication. And as it turns out, the anti-anxiety medication. But you can't just turn these things off, or at least you're not supposed to. And if you do, you go through drug withdrawal. And if you have listened to the previous podcast, you know that she decided to do this cold turkey because of scheduling issues and a gap developing between them being able to supply medication to her. And she figured, what the hell? I already have over 24 hours done on this, skipped on this medication, and I'm about to have start a 24-hour period on the next medication. Why would I want to put the stuff back in my body after we finally got the meds back on January 3rd, her next refill load? And my request to have a step-down procedure from her team never materialized. They never got back to me. I haven't heard a word yet from anybody from the cancer project, from the cancer team, about how to step down drugs. They haven't ever reached out or anything. So it was all left to us. And she decided to hell with it on the 3rd and said, I'm not taking any more of these medications. So she went into withdrawal cold turkey that long ago, on day 153 of the Cancer Project. And I'll start with the anti-anxiety part of that. When you take an anti-anxiety medication in particular for a period of time and it modulates your emotional process, in this case anxiety, you become dependent on it. What does that mean? It's like how drugs that make you high work, okay? When you try to go off of that, your body feels really bad. So when you go off of any anxiety medication, guess what happens? You have panic attacks. You have anxiety reactions because your body wants that chemical to tell your brainstem to modulate your emotions in a different way than anxiety. And you get anxious because you're lacking that artificial stimulation. It's might be referred to as a rebound effect in other medications like allergies. They work for you a while, and then they don't work for you. They create the opposite effect. So she started going through that big time when she withdrew. And that anxiety reaction is hooked to the physiological processes going on, which is her body is also trying to, like a computer, reset itself, reboot itself from the cancer, from the treatment, from the chemo and the radiation damage to her body, and from the fact that all of those things interrupted her normal physiological balance in very major ways for the last 6 months of her life. She lost her appetite. She shrank her stomach. She was nauseous all the time. Even if she wanted to put food in her body, it was hard to keep it down. I mean, all that stuff was going on. Her body hasn't been working right as a gestalt all these months. And as she's withdrawing from these medications, as she completed the damaging treatment to her, and now she's dealing with the withdrawal from the medications, all of that is creating the space for her body to find readjustment. Well, to do that, it's reacting. It's reacting to the loss of the medications, of the drugs. So especially in this time period between 1-2 and 1-15 here, Linda was going through off emotional cliffs every day. She would get up and her emotional going off the cliff was in response to, stimulated by a feeling of pressure in her stomach, in her abdomen, that we finally located as her stomach, not her cervix or her vagina, but her stomach, basically. And that pressure was chronic and constant and intolerant, and it waxed and waned. So it was less tolerant, more tolerant, but it hardly ever went away over the last 13 days. And then that led to, which we now know in hindsight is always the clearest, that deep down in her psyche, in her unconscious, on the back burners, I like to call it, of her mind, I see a gas stove as an example in my head often with this, back burners, front burners. On the back burners of her mind, in a deep-seated way, she believed that that indicated that she wasn't better. She hadn't recovered completely, that the cancer had come back, that she was never going to get better, that after all this horrible stuff she's gone through, it wasn't over, it isn't over, it'll never be over. That's what's been bubbling around deep in her psyche all this time. So when she would get emotionally, have an emotional, physiological emotional reaction of going off the anti-anxiety, which means she'd get scared and start having panic attacks, the thoughts that got attached to that physical reaction were these mental ideas, and they were mostly subconscious. They've only become unearthed and dragged into the light recently over the last 4 or 5 days, basically. And especially what happened with what I'm now going to call the breakthrough. The title of this podcast is Breakthrough. And that breakthrough occurred on Friday, this past Friday. This is Sunday night, the 15th. And so it occurred on the 13th of January, on Friday. So let me go to Friday morning. Friday morning, we got up and she was on the 13th day of hell, which is what drug withdrawal is like for anybody and everybody, even pleasure seekers, not just pain people who had to use it. And I was on the phone for 5 hours that day, on the computer, on the phone, on searches, making phone calls, trying to find trying to get her team to respond in the hospital, couldn't get to anybody directly, sent messages, put phone calls in, and there's a hours to 12 hours to 24 hour delay expected with input to your treatment teams, blah, blah, blah. I went outside of the healthcare that we're under, and I started to look for a drug rehab, and I started to look for inpatient, outpatient settings. I got on the phone with our insurance company and made sure that asked them to give me placements in the Tampa area that were in our network so that our insurance would apply, because, you know, God forbid, if you go outside of your bracket, BAMO. I mean, you know, if you go in somewhere, you'll end up with like $25,000 like that kind of thing dropped in your lap. So anyway, it took 4 or 5 rounds with the insurance company to get information from them, and I needed, God help us. And then I had to go look through all the resources. I had to try to find the placements. I had to call in place and outpatient placements. Finally, at 4:30 or 5 o'clock that afternoon, what it really came down to was, watch this, just like all the answer things that we call into, if this is an emergency, then go to your closest ER. That turned out to be the option after all damn day of going through the C-hall. Was the only route we had to go, and she was a mess all day. So we got in the car and we drove to Tampa General and we went in again through the ER, and we spent 6 hours in the ER on Friday. And what they did was after we got out of the waiting area into the treatment area, we ended up not in a cubicle, not in a room, a treatment examination room. We ended up on a bed in the hallway next to the nursing station. And there was two other people camped out in the hallway in beds. And one guy from an accident, a motorcycle accident, that was having bones set in the hallway on a bed while we were there. It was like being in a MASH unit. If you ever watched MASH from the era of Alan Alda and MASH, it was like being in a MASH unit during a war exercise. Holy crap. Anyway, I'm not surprised anymore. We ended up at 9:45 that night. She had had blood drawn, which is standard if you go through an ER. They're always going to take your blood and run labs. And they decided, based on her complaint about the pressure in her stomach, They cited that that really required, based on her history, having looked at their chart, her charts, that she should have a CAT scan so that they could rule out cancer return, so that to see if there were any masses down in her abdomen that were showing up. But nobody told us that up front. They just take the stuff and you hang out in the hallway. And if you ask questions, and I'm asking more and more pointed questions, the better I get at this game. They were just vague and avoidant and blew us off, basically, until 9:45. Finally, one of the docs that we'd never seen in person the whole time we were there in the treatment thing came out. I don't even know what his position was that night in the ER in terms of how he cared for us, but he was an MD at least. And he came out because I had been bitching and moaning at a couple of people along the way, and they were not being responsive. And then I was even commenting on the fact that they were avoiding answering my questions and they weren't responsive. And everybody was getting irritated probably underneath. Anyway, this guy finally came out at 9:45, this doc, and he was straight and honest with us. And I asked him the hardest questions I could come up with at the time. And this is what we finally discerned at 9:45 on Friday night, that the CT scan hadn't been read yet, hadn't been interpreted, and that they expected her to sit there for another 1.5 hours was their estimate, which means, trust me, they're underestimating, which probably meant 2 hours at least more before whoever reads the CAT scan wrote a report in-house and generated it to the team. And they were going to keep her in the hospital that long before they released her. Short of that, of ruling, and the reason they're waiting for that is to rule out cancer. If they ruled out cancer, they had nothing to give her and nothing to do in response to her distress. She was in withdrawal. The symptoms were all common to withdrawal from these medications, and she was basically on her own. They wouldn't hospitalize her. There's no acute, because of the business model that runs our healthcare system now. Her 13th day out meant that she didn't qualify for any direct intervention. She didn't qualify for hospitalization in even a drug rehab unit. She just didn't qualify for anything. She was expected to go home, take aspirin, and get better. That's really what it came down to. So what this guy gave us at 9:45 was to go to a drugstore on the way home, and buy Benadryl, or buy the equivalent of Benadryl, the same drug, relabeled as Unisom, which is a sleep aid, a over-the-counter sleep aid. I compared the bottles in the drugstore. They're both the chemical name for Benadryl. They were exactly, the only thing they do is change the dosage between the allergy prescription over-the-counter med and the sleep over-the-counter med. So that was it. We went through an ER thing, and we'll pay our fees for that. It'll be part of the insurance bill and all that good shit, and 6 hours of our life to find that out, and all day on the phone to get some kind of damn satisfaction from somebody who's supposed to know what the hell is going on about what she was going through. So we came home. I bought the Benadryl. Just talking to that doctor, though, this is important to note, just talking to that doctor, Linda fell asleep in the car on the way home. She hasn't fallen asleep in the car on the way home from that hospital for 6 months since she started treatment. And it doesn't matter whether we're coming home day or night. She napped on the way home. I went into the drugstore. I came home. She took the Benadryl. She got into bed and she was asleep in 10 minutes. She hadn't slept most of the last 3 nights. I mean, she'd sleep for an hour, hour and a half, and then she'd be up the rest of the night with pressure in her stomach and anxiety and stewing in her head and going nuts all night in her head while I'm trying to sleep, which meant I wasn't sleeping much either. She slept nonstop from the time she got in bed until the following morning. It's Saturday morning. We got up around 8:30. The first thing I did around 9 o'clock was I went into my phone, into my chart, the app in my phone, and I checked for the report. It was there overnight. It showed up. I'm sitting in the bedroom reading that, and she's out having her tea and starting to sit in her chair. And it said very clearly that it found no masses anywhere in her abdomen, and that there was nothing abnormal in the CAT scan, other than anything they'd expect for her age, and nothing problematic that needed to be responded to. So the short and sweet of that is that there's no cancer, you're clear. So I came out and I handed her my phone with the app open and a report there on my phone. I said, it's easier if you just read it for yourself, Lynn. And I gave it to her. I went back into the bedroom to get dressed, or I was going to say comb my hair. I mean, comb my hair in years. Brush my teeth or whatever in order to get done for the day. And 5 minutes later, as I was coming out, she was completing having studied the thing. And as I came through the door, she looked up and she said, so this means I don't have any cancer, right? With that right in her voice. And I said, right. It was like she had a spring in her ass. She literally came out of the chair. And I don't think her feet were on the floor. In an explosion of release, relief, happiness, joy, a blowout, like projectile release, energetically. And I completely understood what that meant at the time, okay? That in hindsight, this anxiety thing and the stuff I started with tonight is what has been driving whatever physiological things are going on in her body as her computer reboots. Her body is struggling to find its balancing, getting all the systems online, and then interrelated to each other in balance. I mean, you know, that's what's going on. Well, that was Saturday morning. It's just now Sunday night. She slept completely well. We both slept completely well last night as well, a good 6, 7, 8 hours. I spent all day completely wiped out yesterday. I couldn't do anything. I was so exhausted from the all day Friday and the half night or the 6 hours in the ER in the hallway. I literally was like a phone. Yeah, we're all using smartphones these days. You watch your battery all day long, right? I was like at 5% when I got out of bed yesterday. I mean, I was completely burned out. And she wasn't much better. We're both really exhausted. So we were slugs all day yesterday. We woke up this morning, had a little more energy. We actually did two loops of our complete apartment complex in a walking process, which is probably 2 miles we walked today, which is more than Linda's walked at one time for exercise in a day in months. Actually, all the way back to the beginning. This is the most walking she's done since she got sick on a day. And the symptomology that I've described that she's been going through is showing up at 1/3 to 1/4, actually closer to 1/4 of the frequency or the intensity that had been showing up to and including last Friday. So the point here is that's how much the emotional part of this experience jacked up the physiological part of whatever's still going on with her biochemistry and her body and its operation. It was multiplying it by threefold. And it's like a bull got popped Friday night. It's like the balloon suddenly came out of the air came out of a balloon, got popped. And whatever's going on right now is much lower and less frequent, and it happened like that almost overnight. Actually, it did happen overnight. So this is breakthrough, and we just had a confirmation of that. She, it's 7:45 at night now on Sunday, the 15th. And half an hour ago, she started getting a little anxious, and she wants to hold my hand when she gets anxious. And then she said to me that pressure's coming back. And what I discerned, and we started talking, starting Friday night was whenever your stomach bothers you, it's your body telling you you're hungry. That's what I came to out of all this Friday night and said to her, and she said, okay, I'll go with that. And we're going with that. And so she sat there an hour ago or half an hour ago and said, I feel that pressure coming on, and I'm starting to feel a little anxious. And I said, so what does it mean when you feel the pressure in your stomach? And she didn't get it for a couple of seconds. And then she said, I need to eat like that. And I said, uh-huh. Your body, we decided whenever you feel the pressure, your body's telling you it needs to eat. Whether you think you do or you feel like you did, doesn't matter. She said, okay. And I said, so should I make you something to eat? And then she asked me to make her a chicken salad sandwich and told me I'll probably only eat half of it, which she turned out to be true, and she's been saying for a long time. And I made the, because how do you make a half a sandwich? I made a whole sandwich, and I gave her, and she ate, I gave it to her, and she ate half of it. And 5 minutes went by, and I said, what's up with the pressure? And she said, it's easing up. I said, what does that mean? She says, I needed to eat. I said, right, there's our confirmation. This is like the second or third round since Friday night of our confirmation of this. We're on the right track, aren't we? I said to her with a question. And she looked at me and thought, and she said, yes, we're on the right track. We're on the right track. She had the most important breakthrough because it's the psychological, emotional, mental belief about our life experience that drives everything. Spirit drives matter. Matter doesn't operate on its own, and spirit or awareness emerges from our brain chemistry. Our spirit generates our brains. Give me a break. So here we are. We are in the coast where we just went over the top of the hill, gang. And her recovery will be rapid and much more rapid and much easier. And I expect within, we were walking around the loop today in the apartment complex. And I said to her, you know, I'm thinking a month from now, your body's going to be completely back to normal. You're going to be feeling yourself work like you've worked before before the cancer showed up in July. You're going to be normal, completely normal in your body again. And along with that, most importantly, your self-confidence is going to be restored. And just to comment on that briefly, Linda has been a stoic since she was 3 years old. When she got raped at 3 years old, which if you've heard earlier podcasts, you're aware of, she figured out very quickly, if she didn't know that before, that she was basically on her own to take care of herself with her family. I mean, yeah, they raised her and all that good stuff, like mine, but they didn't support her. They weren't able to be what they needed to be for her emotionally when she was growing up. And she became the rescuer of the family, the healer, the helper, that kind of thing, as a way to take care of herself and to modulate the amount of loneliness and fear and overwhelm that she felt through some of her experiences. Well, she grew up to be a very stoic adult the entire time I've been married to her. Stoicism is really a word that applies to Linda when it comes to her emotions. She manages her emotions. She controls her emotions. She stays on top of her emotions. That's her strategy has been to do that, and by doing that, she has handled things with her body, which is tied to your emotions, by controlling those things, working past them, working beyond them, those kinds of statements. So she hasn't experienced much fear in this life, and she's lived on a self-manufactured base of self-confidence and self-belief since starting in her early childhood and built out from there. Fear has not been something that has overwhelmed or dominated her since she was at least 3 years old. So now I'm different than that. I have spoken about this before. I think if you've been tagging along, my first issue in life was being scared. And I was aware of being scared as a child. And I wasn't over the hill in being fear-oriented in life until I was around 45. I didn't get over the hill. And then it turned in, it peeled the onion down to my anger, and I just got over the hill with my anger. Guess what? In the last year or so of my life. She hasn't been going so I went through rounds and rounds and rounds of being scared and overcoming it and managing it and getting more in touch, and then I'd be okay and find my balance, and I get scared again at some other level. I went through rounds and rounds of recovering from being scared or overwhelmed by fear in my life. Linda has not, and I've never really had that idea until recently, until this week of my life. I mean, it's not something I thought about her all these years. So this is a virginal experience. She has been knocked for a loop emotionally, and she has been connected to her body and by her body to her emotions as primally, now I was going to say primitively, primally, as we are in the first place. And then this medication in particular concentrated on anxiety, which rebounded the anxiety now that she's unwinding. So fear has been the major thing that's been popping up in her, popping out of her, coming up out of her. And it's not just about this. It's probably about all kinds of things in her life. That fear was repressed very strongly by her all the time, because you can't be self-confident if you're afraid, can you? They're like opposites, salt and pepper, black and white. She's been countering that fear all her life. So this is really like her virginal experience since she was a little girl of being in touch with fear and what fear feels like and what it does in your body and what it activates. Wow. And we're really getting a handle on that now. So she's like a child relearning how to walk on some level at 80 years old on an emotional level. And understanding that has been priceless for her, for me, for the whole issue. And we know what's going on, and a lot of the fear of the fear, the emotion about the emotion, if you will, the motion of the ocean, is out in the light now, and it de-escalates, as I said at the beginning of this, like three quarters of whatever the discomfort or unfamiliarity of whatever's going on with her body, as it shows up, is for her. Whew. So that's the great news. My wife at 80 years old went cold turkey on opiates and benzodiazepines. God, I forgot the name there. Which is when we talked to this doctor in the hospital, he was blown away. He said, "I can't believe that you did this cold turkey on your own over the last 13 days. Shouldn't happen to an 80-year-old, but it did." That is the strength and the power that my wife has in this life. I'm in awe. It blows me away. Anyway, so just to let you all know, we just came over the top of the mountain, and I expect in the next month her to be completely back online, healthy and energized and not back to the way she was, but even better than she was. She's going to be a new person with a new body and new energy and a new confidence that's bigger than the one she had before on some kind of, and I am beginning to feel the joy and the relief of that. It's too early for it to really completely permeate me yet, but it's getting there. So I want you all, if you've been tagging along, to join in that big sigh of relief and that breath of expansion and happiness that we're in the beginning of. She's still scared. She's still timid a little bit. I have to keep reminding her, but I'm going to be here, and I'm going to remind her, and I know, and she knows really, that this is over the top now, and we are going to get it really together. And then as we do this over the next month, we will be exploring the SOT treatment that I talked about earlier in these podcasts to get at the stem cell level of whatever residual cancer is left in her. to completely eradicate it, so it doesn't come back in 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or whatever. That she'll leave this planet from some other reason other than squamous cancer cells. So that's the news, all the news, the good news, and I got it done in 35 minutes. Now, also be aware that I have just, before I did the Cancer Project podcast, I also did a non-cancer podcast today as a companion to it. You probably want to listen to that too if you're listening to this one first. And that's about the relationship between emotion and creation and manifestation. Emotion, creation, manifestation. That's the title and the theme of the podcast. It's a little long, about 55 minutes, but I think you might find it worthwhile to listen to it. So I would suggest you tune into that one too. Thank you for listening. This is Michael Brady of Partners for Karmic Freedom. KarmicFreedom.com, KarmicFreedom@gmail.com. I can be reached at 802-323-6880. Please feel free to comment, opine, send any input or comments that you'd like to make to us, to me. We really are interested in hearing from anybody who listens to our podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a good day.